Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome back to Foment About It on Heritage Radio Network.
We air every Monday night live at 7 o'clock p.m.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
Chris is back from Hong Kong. I'm very glad to have him back in the studio. Yeah, Happy shucks. New Year. This is our first show of 2013. We're very excited. We have Chris Loveridge here to talk about yeast tonight.
Hi, Chris.
Hello, everybody.
But first, we'll have a couple of announcements. So the first announcement that we want to make is that for those of you that don't know, if you're in the New York City area or beyond, Chris Kuzme is now the head brewer at 508 Gaster Brewery.
Congratulations.
Just
Thank you very much. Yay. Thank you very much. We're Manhattan's smallest brewery. Look at that. She's nice. I love you, Roberta's. We're there live in Roberta's in Bushwick. They're all very nice here. It's a live studio audience. We're Manhattan's smallest brewing facility. It's a two-barrel system, and I'm really honored to be there. It's awesome. It's a really fun time. The family is great over there. The food is incredible. The wine is incredible. And the beer, I think, keeps up as well.
I agree. So Chris has you have two beers on tap right now?
Yeah.
And you've brewed six so far?
Eight now. And so, actually, I'm having a nice event in honor of President Obama's second term. I just brewed with our contingent or our constituent Zach Kinney. We made the White House Honey Porter, and I don't know if you guys know the story about that, but the White House has been making their own beer for quite some time now, and a lot of us homebrewers around the country signed a petition and demanded the recipe as per the Freedom of Information Act. So we just brewed
They released two recipes, the porter and an ale, right? Lighter
yep,
blonde
honey,
ale.
Honey,
what a great use of that act.
I know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But anyway, we just brewed this beer, and we used local honey from upstate, Nature's Way, and we had a couple twists of our own based on it. There, some things were kind of nebulous in there. They didn't tell you what kind of bittering hops they used. I used Centennial. And I actually did some first wort hopping. Anyway, I'm very, very excited about this, and we'll be releasing it at 508 on January 21st until kegs kick.
In the Four More Beers event.
Four More Beers! So, Four More Beers! Four
after more. We'll be heading there after our January 21st show, if anybody wants to meet us down there.
And actually, it's pretty serendipitous because that day, actually, Peter Hepp from Beereria at Italy, one of New York's other two brew pubs, is going to be our guest, and he brews a lot with honey, and so I'll be,
So that show is going to be all about brewing with honey, basically, yep. Which is very exciting.
Same day as we release this honey ale.
Yeah. All in good time. The only other announcement is Homebrew Alley number 7 is coming up. So what date is that, Chris?
That is February 8th and 9th. It's a national competition sanctioned by the AHA and the BJCP. You can find more information about that at homebrewalley.org. Registration is open now. And if you're in the New York area and you want to help out, if you're a BJCP judge, you can also sign up for it there. If you want to steward and want to see what a competition is about, we definitely need volunteers as well to help that go on.
And you do not need to be a judge to do that.
Correct.
So anyone, if you're interested in learning how homebrew competitions work and run and tasting some interesting beer, please, sign up to be a steward.
And if you just want to hang out and maybe even, just support your fellow local New York homebrewers, we're actually doing it at Alewife Queens, one of Long Island City's best beer bars. I mean, one of New York City's best beer bars. Mm-hmm. It's a really awesome place. Patrick Doniger's been really awesome to open up his arms to us homebrewers and to allow us to hold it there. We're going to have a giant party on the 9th. Starting at 6 o'clock till the end.
Yeah, we'll have the awards ceremony. Yep.
Which features a giant championship belt for the best of show winner.
Exciting. That'll be a lot of fun, and everybody is invited to come down. If you're a home brewer in the New York area or beyond, please feel free to enter. How many entries did we have last year?
We had 680 entries last year. So, with the growing popularity of Homezymergy, we expect probably to break 800 this year. We're one of the largest on the East Coast, and everything seems to keep growing.
Yep, it's a great way to get feedback and win cool prizes. And it'll be a fantastic after party afterward, especially if you want to meet other homebrewers in the area.
Absolutely.
All right, so on to our show.
I think in our first show, I said we were talking about how to make beer, and I think there's a saying that says, you know, brewers make wort. Yeast makes beer.
They do all the work for us.
They do all the work for us. So our job is to provide them a happy home and just to make sure they're happy. And what is yeast, Chris Loveridge, teacher of the yeast class at Brooklyn Homebrew?
Yes, there's I'm just taking over the reins at the class at Brooklyn Homebrew, and yeast is all what I'm teaching about. I have a lot of experience teaching. For the last 7 years, I've been a science teacher down at a school, at a high school down in South Brooklyn, and I am beyond excited to finally be able to bring all that experience to willing adults.
How does one participate in that class? And we'll retouch back on the back. Do you just contact Brooklyn Homebrew?
It's on the Brooklyn Homebrew site. Right now there's three set up. One's already sold out. The one tomorrow sold out. And two more are coming in the next 2 weeks.
Are they individual classes or are they stages?
They are individual classes now. Hopefully in the future there'll be different stages and different levels for different different brewers and where they are and where they want to be. But to get back to your question, yes, about what a yeast is, a yeast is one of our fabulous fungus, which really is just very, very useful for us. It's part of the whole big order of living things that include mushrooms and different molds. But yeasts are, of course, the ones that we use for fermentation mostly. Of course, you use it also for bacteria in fermentation and other things. But it's really just those wonderful unicellular microorganisms that do everything we need them to.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I love those guys. So much fun from it.
Totally.
If I were to, so it's everywhere, right? I mean, how does
it is everywhere?
How do we,
and has a million functions.
Mm-hmm. One of the great things about yeast I actually get to do with my kids, because I cannot talk about beer with my children, of course. So we talk about bread a lot, and we actually. Every year, I have them do an entire long college-level project where they get to go out and really harvest yeast straight from the air. They go outside, they go inside, and they get yeast everywhere, all over the place.
How do you have them
collected? Do you guys make bread from it?
Yes, I end up making, it definitely tastes more like a sourdough bread than anything else.
Right.
But what I have them do, I have them make a little bit of a sugar water solution, put a little cheesecloth on top of some beakers that, of course, I sanitize and do everything right with them, and let it sit out for about 24 hours. Every group does a couple samples, and they come back and because we're not using any hops or any antifungal agents, there's a lot of mold growing. But I would say each group out of the three, there's usually one that we get to get some yeast out of. I then put it on a petri dish to really make sure, and then I bring it up to a starter and make bread out of it with them.
Okay, so you're making like a slant basically or something.
Exactly. But we go big to small. And then
back to
up.
Big. Yes. Okay. So let's talk about what a slant is. Like, why do you do that? Because actually, so that's also applicable in beer making.
Yes.
So what is a slant? What process are you doing? What does that mean?
So all you're basically doing is just making a petri dish with agar solution in sugar water.
What is agar?
Agar is actually the stuff that makes it turn into like a jello-like mm-hmm. substance. It's in jello and all those type of things. And it's used for petri dishes.
Okay. And it's kind of a neutral growing substance, a substrate for the yeast to grow on.
Exactly. It just makes it a little bit of solid so we can, all the microorganisms grow on the top.
It's not exactly like what happens in Jell-O, or like what is in Jell-O, right? Not from hooves or anything? Or is it? What's the derived
agar
from?
Can come from different different
from
sources.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or probably animal products.
Fish
as well.
Guts?
Could be.
Is it some sort of like?
Could be. We have this really nice science catalog that we get to order everything at the school from.
Which you can too at home. Like Edmund Scientific is for everybody.
It
let's
really
be honest.
Is. It really is.
Is there a brand called Sammy? Like, can you get some Sammy agar? Thank you. Take a beer all week.
Oh, man.
So. So when you, what's the process do you do to get these samples that your students do to plate them up? Because you could do the same thing with beer yeast.
Absolutely. And if you actually get good enough at this process, you could take one Y yeast smack pack or whatever and put it onto a bunch of plates and just, you will always be able to keep having plates waiting for you to keep reusing. And it takes a little bit of science work. It takes a little bit of practice to really get everything going right. But if you really put some time in, you can have a lot of yeast last for a long time. What you do is that you spread, you actually do a smear, basically, of the yeast onto the agar plates. Let it sit for a while. You put it into a fridge to slow down anything that's happening. But after about 24 hours, you can start seeing colonies growing. Now, bacteria can't really see easily, but the yeast cells are really obvious. They really have this nice little round colony. They're not fuzzy. They're not weird looking. If anything of that's happening, that's mold. Don't put that in beer.
Right.
Don't keep using that. But then you just kind of take those samples off, put it into a nice little starter, literally like a 50 milliliter starter. Shaky, shaky for 24 hours. Put that 50 milliliter into a little bit bigger starter the next day. Shaky, shaky for a few hours. If you have stir plates, that works great. If not, you can just keep aerating it over and over again.
By shaking it?
Yeah, by giving it a good shake whenever you walk past it.
What is a starter?
A starter is just the simplest beer on the planet. It's an easy brew day. It's small. Usually you only do about, you take a 1 liter bottle of soda, dump out the soda, fill it up with water, and then you take about 2/3 cup of dried malt extract. You put them together, heat it up, cool it down, put the yeast into it.
That's sanitizing before.
Yes.
Optimally.
Yep, you sanitize before, but at the same time.
Why a starter?
It makes, okay. There's a lot of reasons why you can go into starters. Starters are just such a simple thing to do to really increase everything about your yeast. Okay? And when I say increase, sometimes that means actually less thereof. You could take away a lot of the off flavors that come from yeast, because even though I've been brewing for a long time, it really took me a while to realize that a lot of the things that made my homebrew taste bad came from me not using enough yeast.
So underpitching.
Yeah, definitely underpitching. It wasn't a magic recipe. It wasn't some secret procedure. It was just have enough yeast to put into my beer. What I ended up doing, once I realized that I could make a starter, is that you're taking something from a... this is only true for liquid yeast. Dry yeast are a little bit different story. You take a certain number, and you just allow them to double. So you go from about, 100 billion cells to 200 billion cells. A little bit less, but you do that in about 24 to 48 hours, and suddenly, instead of your beer tasting all wacky with all these weird type of, like, I call it yeast noise, it just isn't a smooth, clean beer. Instead of having that problem, you go to the opposite, where suddenly it tastes like you're buying it from a bar, and you can just drink it down and...
Because one thing that happens when you underpitch is that the yeast gets stressed.
Really?
And when stressed. They get stressed, they basically, they can shoot off some chemicals or esters, other types of compounds that we interpret as humans as off flavors.
Right. These are all just parts of fermentation. They happen all the time in every fermentation process. We just figure out a way to make it less concentrated, less amount. And that has to do with a couple of things. And making a starter is one of the best ways to cut down on the problems with that, by having the right pitching rate.
Right. And how do you find out about the right pitching rate? So I know that I use Mr. Malty on my iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
That's easy. That was designed by Jamil Zanishev. He also has Mr. Malty, I think, online still.
And has recently wrote an incredible book called Yeast.
Yes.
Which we'll talk more about in a bit. But so anyway, I use, like, I just, you know, throw it in Mr. Malty and use a pitching calculator. That's mm-hmm. the easiest the way that I know.
Exactly. That's a very easy way. There's a couple general rules. Usually what I like to do is that if you're doing with something like a 1050 ale, you're looking at a good 1 to 2 liters. As you go up to something like a 1070, 1080, you really want to start
Original gravity. We're talking about original gravity, yes, for those of you who are just starting out.
Which means the more stuff in your beer and the more alcoholic you want to make your beer.
The more yeast you need.
Exactly. The more yeast you need. The stronger the beer, the more yeast. And same thing with lagers. Lagers are actually, you're starting over there on that high, strong alcohol content ale. You want to put that same amount of yeast into a regular lager, because the cold temperature really slows down the process that they're doing. And you have to take that into account. I have made miserable lagers for years, and it's really taken me a long time to figure out how to do it correctly. And that has to do with just putting enough yeast in.
And on that note, we're going to take a break. So thank you very much for listening to Ferment About It. We'll be right back with Chris Loveridge and yeast.
Yeast.
got yourself a hurricane running through your brain, driving you crazy, all for naught campaign. Like a red-eyed wild stallion, hell-bent to win, a battle with no winners, a war with no end. On the banks of forgiveness, you clutch to your burden. Her water's a baby, but you won't throw it in. You hung a dove, flying like a crow. You know, but you won't let it go. Up into a sky of hate, further you go, leaving the solution way down below. You know, but you won't let it go. You are a dove, flying like a crow.
Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Every Tuesday at 12 p.m., you can call food scientist Dave Arnold and ask any question you want.
John from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Dave. Cooking
issues. Who am I fooling? This is horrible stuff. Without glutamic acid, you die.
It is a matter of taste, but there's a lot more fat in sausage than you think.
Get ahead of the curve. Tune into Cooking Issues every Tuesday at 12 p.m. on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, hello, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Fun Man About It on heritageradionetwork.org. Is there an echo in there? We're talking to Chris Leverage, talking about yeast, and we're going to recap just a touch on what we were just talking about and get into further things to better your fermentations.
So I want to go back to what you were talking about, lagering.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're making a lager, tell us again kind of the ABCs of yeast and lager. I've only made one lager.
Really?
And it turned out well, yes.
I've luckily ramped up my homebrew setup to now I have... two refrigerators dedicated just to fermentation.
We do as well. We just haven't kicked it in since we moved. So
give yourself some time to get there. But so temperature can really, really have a big impact on yeast, and especially when you start cooling it down. Now, lager yeast does function at that colder temperature, so it'll still ferment and do its job. It's just slower. And when you add more time, you also, a lot of lagers have a little bit less flavor. It takes a little longer for it to happen. A lot of problems can come up. So one of the ways to really make sure these off flavors don't happen, because in a lager, an off flavor, you taste it right away, a big way to solve that is to just pitch enough yeast. And this can be frustrating because it's not just a simple 1 liter starter anymore. You're starting to talk about having to make a step starter or buying a whole bunch of yeast from the store, like 3 or 4 different packets, putting those into a big starter, and then putting the beer on top of that.
Now, what's a step starter?
A step starter. So yeast, when they're crowded, kind of stop replicating. They kind of stop budding, and they kind of just eat the beer. They just ferment. And that's okay. But if you're really worried about making enough yeast to pitch into beer, you're going to need to kind of use their biology to get what you want out of it. So,
you want them to multiply.
Right. You really are going for number here. You're not going for other characteristics out of a starter. You just want the right cell number. So the way to do that out of a 1 liter starter, you take 900 milliliters. So 90% of it, you dump that into your carboy, and then you save that other 10% to put into a brand new 1 liter starter. And then you wait 2 days, and then you do it again, and then you do it again, and then you do it again until you get to the right amount you need. So if you're doing like a Weizenbach or some Doppelbach that's really strong, you're going to be looking at 3 or 4 liters of starter. Again, the shortcut to get around that would just be to buy 4 packs of yeast and to pitch that into a nice, good size starter, like 3 or 4 liters, and then you'll get that same number.
Good. Now, do you use dry yeast?
Okay, I play a lot with 1 gallon experiments, so I'll do one batch and I have 5 1 gallon little jugs, and I'll just pitch into them, and then I'll start playing with different yeast. I find that experiencing these differences are far more effective to understanding what they really do. and tasting
it. I agree.
Yeah. Because, you know, when I was figuring out my IPAs and stuff like that, I just, you know, pitched the same beer into five different little jugs, and I used different yeast in all of them. And all of a sudden I realized, like, for me, my favorite type of IPA is made with British ale yeast. Don't know why. That's just what balances everything out to me. That's what I like.
You were talking about underpitching. What happens if you have too much yeast, and how do you decide?
So it can still take away from the beer, but to a much less extent. Overpitching, you're going to get a little thinner beer. It's going to eat up everything. You're going to get less of those characteristics that you really do want, like all those esters and some of those phenols you might be looking for. But at the same time, it'll just make the beer a little bit more drinkable. Not the worst characteristic from homebrew. I'm sure we've all have had enough of the other.
Right. One thing that did, I was thinking about, and we talked about this over the break, is that now sometimes people intentionally underpitch, like with Hefeweizens. So if people want more of that yeast characteristic, so Hefeweizen yeast notoriously gives, you know, banana, clove, bubblegum. There's a variety of different aromas and flavors that come from this yeast.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times people will intentionally underpitch their Hefeweizen in order to stress the yeast and get more of those esters and phenols.
And they will. And it's really easy to do. I've had only limited success because I also find that I get a lot of the fusel alcohols, mm-hmm. and that's what makes things taste like paint thinner, which I'm not fond of.
Especially in a Hefeweizen.
Yeah. It's this careful balance of, you know, how much are you underpitching, how much are you stressing out the yeast. If you do underpitch, temperature is even more important. So if you're just putting your beer in a closet, you might want to still pitch a little bit more and, you know, practice it. Do it a couple times. See what kind of results you get. To get that banana flavor or that clove flavor, whatever you're really going for.
Right. So there's characteristics from the yeast that you want, then you can, you know, underpitch intentionally in order to get to increase those.
Absolutely.
It just will take some experimentation. We have a friend that has worked on his Hefeweizen for a long time, made many, 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 many versions of this until he got it right. But, you know, it does take some experimentation if you're looking for that exact flavor and aroma profile mm-hmm. from the yeast.
But you can, you talked about temperature too. Things change with that, not just in how fast it's working, but in flavors that come from it as well.
I find that temperature, as soon as I made that jump up to having that chest freezer for my fermentation, the beer went from, okay, this is good, to this is really good. This is great. Give me another. And I consider that, fermentation happens at a whole different bunch of temperatures. And optimal is actually 90 degrees. But you should never ferment your beer at 90 degrees. There's a lot of other stuff coming out of the yeast at that time. But if you have your beer going up from, 68 degrees in your closet up to 77 degrees, there's all this other stuff that's coming out in the flavor profile. All these other esters and phenols and all these other chemicals that can really just kind of get in the way of the beer. So if you're able to find a way to keep that beer at just one temperature, you're only going to be dealing with that one characteristic to come out, and that really just makes it easier to drink. You know, you may like the character, you may not like the character, you may need to adjust it next time, but it's just going to be easier to drink, and all the other characteristics you may be going for will come out. So if you're doing a pale ale, you're going to taste the hops more. You're doing a nice malty beer, you're going to taste that malt character more, you know, like that's with a good porter or like a nice brown ale. It just makes it easier, and all of a sudden all your beers taste great.
Does this relate to making bread? Does this happen in bread at the same and conversely in the same way?
Well, when you think about making bread and stuff like that, when you first put all the yeast in, you don't really want to put them in the fridge, right?
Right.
You want to end up putting them in a little bit warmer area. Now that's a lot for speed, but that's also for all the other flavor characteristics you want to come out when you're using yeast.
Because people want more flavor, generally, when they do their bread.
The opposite of beer is, of course, the same but different, is bread, where you want more flavor and more character to come out in the product.
Right. So let's talk about temperature control.
Don't think you can overpitch your yeast just to fix for a temperature control.
Nope.
It doesn't work that way.
It doesn't.
So conversely to what you're saying.
No, you want to be kind to your yeast in every way possible.
Yes. The big difference you're going to notice is when you do all the things, like, you know, you put oxygen into your beer, you have the right temperature control, you put the right yeast in, and then you make sure you have the right yeast strain. When you have put all four of those, that's where you see that big jump in your flavor of the beer. It's not just one.
Right. And the thing is, it's less... I mean, I make a lot of sours, so I kind of like that unpredictable.
Do you really?
Yes.
That's fantastic.
That unpredictable. But when you're making a straight-up IPA or a stout mm-hmm. or something, you don't want that unpredictability. You want to have, you know what you want it to taste like. So that's why, you know, having some control, you know, treating your yeast kindly is important,
mm-hmm.
because you're not looking for lots of flavor from your yeast. You're looking for flavor, like you said, from your hops and your malt. So we'll talk quick about temperature control. There's mm-hmm. some easy things. You don't need a freezer. I mean, we've talked about this before on the show, and, you know, it's constant. It's a little trickier, especially, you know, New York City apartments. A lot of times they're overheated in the winter. We don't have central air in the summer. Yeah, yes. You know, we have our difficulties, and as, you know, as everybody does across the country. But there are definitely tips and tricks on how to keep your beer in control.
So there's a lot of simple ways you could do, even just finding a closet that's not close to your radiator. You know, things that aren't in your kitchen where you cook can help with your temperature control. But also, think a little bit scientifically. If you increase the amount of water, you're going to slow the temperature change, right? Because more water means more energy needs to go into it in order.
So that's a cushion. Basically, the water acts as a kind of, if you think about it, like a cushion to the temperature.
Right. And I've always found that if you remember those big jugs when you used to have cake parties when you were in college, right, and you used to grab those big jugs. Those are huge jugs that if you have one, you can fill that up with another 10 mm-hmm. gallons of water, meaning that for your temperature of your wort to change, you would need to change 15 gallons of water.
Right.
It's just not going to happen as quick. But also, another really easy way I found is to repurpose those styrofoam coolers. If you ever get something from Omaha Steaks, you ever see those, you know, really nice coolers they have in the summer at 7-Eleven or wherever you get your coolers, you can use them as insulation for your fermenter. And, you know, a couple of frozen soda bottles filled with water that you just throw in the freezer, you have a couple of them that cost you nothing, you just put it right in, can drop your fermentation temperature, those 5 or 10 degrees that you really need.
Yeah, and those are easy to change out. I mean, just keep, you know, have 4 soda bottles around,
mm-hmm.
you know, keep 2 with your in your cooler, styrofoam cooler, 2 in the freezer, and just swap them out.
Just swap them out once a day. Makes a big difference.
And if you're using a carboy, I saw this recently, even though it's been around for a while, on the Brewing Network. If you make angel food cake and you have one of those angel food cake round, cake pans,
uh-huh.
put water
bun
in that,
pans.
Freeze
bun
that.
Pans, there you go. Freeze that and put it around the top of the the carboy, like just through the hole. And
That's a fantastic idea. It's like awesome. An ice ring.
It's a giant ice ring. You just pop an ice ring on the top of everything and hold it
fantastic.
Down.
Fantastic.
It's a cool one. Wet t-shirts too.
Yeah, I've heard that. The wet t-shirt approach just seems so wet and so messy.
And it does, it dries out too quick. And I mean, especially in winter with all the radiator heat, you mm-hmm. know, it's your all our apartments are super dry.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I've also one real quick thing when it comes to really controlling your temperature. I learned this from the Jameel talk when he was traveling around selling his book, which is absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. Go to actually see him, shake his hand, and talk to him.
Yes.
You know, the internet's a wonderful thing.
He was here last. I mean, he came here at the launch of this book, Yeast, yeah. The Practical Fermentation, the Practical Guide to Fermentation.
Chris
he came
was
to
there,
that. That, yeah. that what you're talking about? Okay, yeah. So that was at Brooklyn Humber, which you're now teaching.
Yes, I'm again with that class starting real soon. Starting tomorrow, I start teaching a yeast class at Brooklyn Homebrew. Which for the second 2 classes, there's still something available. Try to check it out if you can.
So this is kind of a preview. I mean, we'll cover more yeast in the future. We only have 30 minutes. So if you guys would like, if you're in the New York City area, you would like to learn more about yeast, please go to brooklynhomebrew.com.
Come on down, check it out.
The other thing is, we'll tell you. So this is actually the yeast book that we all reference is called Yeast, The Practical Guide to Beer Fermentation. It's by Chris White with Jameel Zanna, chef. It's available. It's published by the Brewers Up. Publications Brewers Association. It's a fantastic book. I mean, seriously, every home brewer. I mean, I think it's a little intimidating for a beginner home brewer, but there's a ton of useful information.
Absolutely.
The big thing I picked up from him was to worry about fermentation in the first 3 days. Worry about that temperature the first 3 days. If you could pay attention for 3 days, you'll make a big difference.
Yeah, that's true. Because most of the fermentation is happening then, so that's when you want the tight control. All right, so we got to wrap it up today. I want to remind you, if you'd like to support the show and heritageradionetwork.org, which is a fantastic organization, they're not-for-profit. Membership starts at $60, and if you homebrew out there, you get a 5% discount at both Bitter and Esters and Brooklyn Homebrew. You also get $1 off all pints at Jimmy's Number 43. Mm-hmm. So check out heritageradionetwork.org.
And come visit me at 508 Gastro Brewery.
Yay!
Yeah, yeah. We'll be there. There. Very excited about it.
Thank you guys so much for listening. So next week, we're very excited. We're going to have a Kvass show with the author of the book on Kvass, Dan Woodsky from Western Pennsylvania. So tune in next Monday at 7 p.m. and we're going to quiz Dan Woodsky about Kvass. I'm making a fresh batch tomorrow and it should be a lot of fun.
Thanks to engineer Joe Galarraga and our producer Jack Insley. Thank you, Heritage Radio Network and Roberta's live here in Bushwick.
We'll talk to you next week.
Forget about it.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.